Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online, as always, on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And with me today, I have a very, very interesting person who's got a very interesting application for Transmedia in the area of recruitment. Hello, Stefan.
Hello, Robert.
So, Stefan, I shied away from pronouncing your family name, so maybe you should give yourself a short introduction and then tell us how you've been approaching recruitment.
Right. I'm Stefan Duquesnoy. I'm from the Netherlands, and over the last 2 years, I've been working with a company called Domain 5, and we've developed ARGs for finding interesting people for interesting job profiles. To put it simply. And
so what type of interesting jobs might they be?
Well, the first project we started up, that was a project for the Dutch Ministry of Defense. And we were pretty much looking for hackers or cybersecurity specialists that did not only have the skill set to do the jobs, but also had a certain morale or ethics to work in the environment of the Ministry of Defense and in national security.
So it wasn't just the ability to sort of hack through some code. There was, you know, this sort of social aspect, this moral aspect as well, then.
Yeah, exactly. It's there are tons of challenges being made where people are just being asked to solve different kind of logical puzzles and try to get through that using their skills in software and hardware. And we thought, well, we can do that, but also combine it with seeing what kinds of decisions people would make and how they would process through the game by talking to different characters. Much more like to how you would play, for example, Mass Effect 2 on the PlayStation.
And why did the Department of Defense want to recruit people in this way rather than just, you know, going to a recruitment consultant, for example? Or
well, it's part of it. It's they were open to trying it out. We did a pilot project. It was a new technology, a new idea, and it just connected with the people at Defense to try it out in this way. And they have a desire to recruit specialists in this arena because of the very obvious growth of cyber crime and in the world, and that they needed to have more people in Defense to deal with that.
But was there any kind of thinking that, you know, like if you just put an advert in a paper and ask people to sort of nominate themselves, that gets a different or a worse result than if they were to do these kind of games?
Well, the thing is, it's if you, at least how we pitched it, is if you put an ad in the paper, then people are going to get into that conversation with the ministry already with the idea that they're going to work for the ministry. So they're going to not be completely natural, and they're not likely to make decisions that they would normally do, but they would instead create decisions that the employer would like to see.
Right.
And we figured if we can have a game over prolonged periods, then even if people in the beginning of the game would try to be a different character and present itself, there would be a big chance that it wouldn't last throughout the entire game, because at some point you're going to act natural. You're going to do your natural decision making.
Got it. So what was the sort of stages of the game, or what was the story or the concept behind the game?
Well, the game it started as a very simple forum post on two of the larger Dutch websites that deal with IT. Tweakers and fok.nl. And it started with a guy that said he found a file on a stick and he didn't know what to do with it. And he was looking for people that could perhaps open the file and find out what was in it.
So this was a comment on a forum?
Yeah.
Right.
And we worked together with the forums to get that post on there and also to not get it banned or removed, because it's... It's a bit of a weird start in that way to say, oh, I found something and look it up. It's a very good way to also spread a virus. So that was the first start of the game. But as soon as it started staying up, people also started realizing that this probably wasn't a virus, because otherwise it wouldn't stay up on the forums. So it got some interest, and And people started downloading the file. And when they downloaded the file, they met a very simple encryption that they needed to hack. And in the and they would find information about the companies involved in the game and the information that the character on the forum needed. And then you can email him with the answers, and then the game progresses.
And so what was the sort of format of the files on the stick? Like, once it was in, was it like just text documents, or was it an app that ran?
There? It was, we had some images. The story is about Stickmergy. And Stickmergy is a scientific concept where about the way how fish coordinate, or bees, or ants. So it's like you have this kind of massive amount of organisms walking around, and they all know where they are all going, and that process is called Stickmergy.
Oh wow!
So what we did is, in the first documents, we put some random information about Stickmergy in there. And we put in a security note from the security officer of a laboratory in Den Helder in the Netherlands. That was called Applied Stickmergy. And they did research in this area. And the security note was about how the new security officer started working there, and she was changing some rules around in the business. Like there would be no more Dropboxing allowed on the network and stuff. And it was sent to several people in the company that worked there. So you got all these email addresses, and then you could start doing your research.
Really good.
Yeah.
And so what was the in the forum then?
Yeah.
It said, I've got this file and I want to know what's on it.
Yeah.
And did people report back to that character in the forum, or outside?
They all sent it by email. It was received quite negatively in the beginning. So we had to come out with some kind of character to say this is a game.
Okay.
And then the reaction started to change, and then people also started, oh, this is a game, so I'm not going to put it in the forum thread because I don't want to give the answers away to all the other players.
Right.
And it was interesting to see that they were very contained about their process through the game and how they played.
How do you mean contained?
There wasn't a lot of spoiling going on, and there wasn't a lot of leaking of answers going on. And then that was quite interesting to see, because you would expect a game that's played in the public like this to also get all their answers and solutions out into the public.
And what do you think was like motivating them? Because did you offer any kind of prize for?
No, nothing. Not at the beginning, at least. I think at first one of the things that we said is that it wasn't clear who created the game. And that was already something, because we wanted to trigger people that are curious and that are basically on the line of legal, illegal, to find out what's going on in a game. I think by presenting the challenge, by not coming forward with who who made the game, is there was already a challenge in there in finding out who did it. For us as creators, it was also a very hard thing to deal with, because of the law and privacy and all that kind of stuff that you need to keep in mind when it comes to legal aspects.
Yeah. And so presumably, you had to like cloak your email addresses and IP and everything like that?
We did in the beginning. What we also noticed very quickly, with the kind of talent that we were looking for, that made absolutely no sense.
Yeah, right.
So just one small anecdote. I was driving home from work, I think in the second week that the game was live, and I got a text message on my phone asking me when the next part of the game would go live. So that's, yeah, it's...
So they track you down, yeah, got you down.
Exactly. one of the things that I did when we started development, and I also told the people that I work with, is do not put our employer in your Facebook profile or in your LinkedIn profile or anywhere. We're just freelancers and that's it. Just to keep that away from this. Yeah.
That's really good. And how long was the game? How long did it
The game lasted 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And we unleashed one chapter a week. And the go-through speed for the was about 1 day, I think, for the really talented people. And for the ones that were basically just exploring and were playing more casual, they took about a week.
And what was what constituted a chapter? What was the difference week to week?
We pretty much used the hero's journey structure. So we had this chapter that was the start about leaving your home, to put it like that, and to find out where your alliances lie. Then we had a chapter that was a big climaxing one, where you do all the revelations and you find out what the story is about. And what the challenges are that you overcome, pretty much all based around the Abyss. And the last chapter was returning home, and it was summarizing everything that you found and delivering that to the right person, or who you think the right person is.
So there were choices to, was there like a branching narrative then? Different characters
by. Some, yeah, there was. And some of the choices were very clear. Some of them were not so clear. For example, it's when you get the email file at the beginning, you get the email addresses. And then you already can make a choice there. Am I going to write back to the forum character? Or am I going to write directly to the people whose names I found in this document? And what am I going to do with them? So we had people that wrote to the hacker right away. And that were just going to go along with the guy who spread the files. But he also had people who wrote the security officer of the company and told them, hey, there's a stick of your information out on the streets. And we also had people who wrote security officer with a different goal in mind. And that was something that we didn't expect. But they tried to social engineer her so they could hack the company through her. Which is also a very interesting approach that we didn't expect at all to happen.
So tell me a bit more about that. So what type of thing did they do then?
Well, it started with, hey, we found this file. I'm working as a security specialist. I can help you track down what's going on. And then they would start asking questions, and she would be like, oh, I would appreciate that. And this would be all be custom work. We know it's because we had to reply something. So, and then they started to ask about passwords and about other security problems. They started asking her about her private life. So they could find out possible leads to passwords that she would personally use. All the characters have Twitter accounts and LinkedIn profiles and stuff like that, so they all kind of exist online. And they tried to figure out who the character was. So that turned out to be a very interesting surprise, basically.
Wow. Now all these characters were completely fictional.
Yeah.
You'd invented everybody.
Yeah.
And did it ever get scary dealing with this? Because there could be some, not very nice people that are getting involved in this now.
Yeah, of course, we did as much as we could in protecting ourselves. But also one of the things that we did, at least me and Dennis, we did most of the development on the project, or most vocal development. We also made sure that everything at home was secure digitally, that we are... that everything made sense, to put it like that, to put ourselves out there. There were some things that you think like, oh, if this goes wrong, people can really completely trace my life around and mess up everything. we did everything we could to make sure it wouldn't happen, and thank God it didn't yet.
No, your name's out. Did you have to have any kind of specialist security advisors on the project team?
We had some luck. I started in IT, and that already helped a lot. I used to do some questionable online things myself when I was a teenager. And Dennis is a network specialist as well. So that already created a lot of room for us, at least that we knew what we were doing until a certain level. And we also had a guy who works as a security specialist for a company in Amsterdam that helped us put a cherry on top, to put it like that.
And it's like, how closely did you work with the client? What was that relationship like?
Well, it was a very good relationship. You're working with government, though, and governments are not the most quick organizations to work with. But they've been very clear about what they want. They very well understood that we were working on an experiment, and that we were going to see if this technology was usable. And in that sense, you're expecting a very rigid company structure to work with when you're working with the Ministry of Defense. It's the idea we have of these big buildings that follow very strict principle and policy on how things are done. And we discovered that we had a very fluid working relationship with the task force that we worked with, and that was very nice.
Did you have to, like, what were the, like, approval stages? Did they come up with a scenario, or did they vet the scenario?
We started working on scenarios, I think last year, August, and it took a bit longer than expected, but we started out with disaster scenarios, pretty much, like scenarios that that a foreign hacker was going to try something, or that like exploding the dikes through hacking, stuff like that. Very big Hollywood-like stories. And it's you very quickly notice lots of political issues behind all of those ideas. So you have to steer away from anything that could be actual or could be a political hard spot. Right. Like, for example, we could right now the Netherlands have an army presence in Mali. That's something that we couldn't work with. We couldn't work with China, Russia, and all of those kind of things.
Right. Okay. So is that why... So did it come down to like a private security risk in the end there? Was that...
Well, it's the story that we ended up with. It's the Applied Stigmergy story. What it would be like if you would go through the entire game, you would discover that the Applied Stigmergy company created an algorithm that would let all kinds of forces in the battle theater react to each other very quickly based on a stigmergic algorithm.
Wow.
So basically, as the battlefield would change, so would the entire task force that's deployed. And it would all be calculated by the algorithm what would happen. So you can see it like the algorithm would be a puppet master.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was the idea that we played with and that we tried to develop.
The people that were playing the game?
Yeah.
So the objective was to recruit them. How much did they start to role play, and how much were they kind of on the level? Like, when did they know that this was a recruitment thing?
They knew rather fast. It's after you sent the second email, we already had sent out a message stating that it was a game. To prevent problems legally.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much at the beginning, it was already clear that this is a game that you're playing. And also about the principles of the game and what's going to happen with your data and everything like that.
Okay, but did you say, and it's sponsored by the Ministry of Defense?
No.
Right.
No, it was presented as if it was created by Domain 5.
Right.
And that's it.
And did people like invent a character, for example, and start doing fan fiction and stuff like that?
No, it's we didn't see anything like that happening. It would have been fun. Maybe some people created fake characters to try and to play the game differently.
Right.
But I don't think I've seen that come back in the data, because there would be some hints that would tell you that. But no, I think pretty much everyone played how they are and how they want to play. And it's also one of the things is only a very small percentage of people actually discovered that the Ministry of Defense was the client. Some other, most people discovered a security company that's also faked, that was pretending to be the client. And there was also a journalist involved that was pretending to be the client.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The game as it was designed, it was to weed people out. It was so that people would fall by the wayside as like a filter mechanism. Is that correct? So that,
yeah.
And how did you think to, like, how did you design the puzzles so that it got harder and harder? How did you approach that?
Well, we designed the puzzles as one big challenge. And that was something that apparently people were not used to. But you design it as the information that you get in the beginning is also information you need to use at the end of the game. you would get information in one part of the challenge that's encrypted, and then you need to decrypt it later when you've learned more about the game and the algorithms and the backstory. So everything was very connected with each other. And what we saw is that most people that we lost and were filtered out were those that needed to think, that needed to create their own process, and that needed to set their own order of solving the puzzle. Most people were very linear in what I wanted to do. So, for example, we had one of the challenges, and it's you get in touch to the guy on the forum. He turns out to be a hacker, and he's leading a group of hackers to get more information from Applied Stigmergy, and he wants you to join them. And as soon as you join the group and you say, all right, let's do it, you get emails from four different hackers, and they all have their own specific problem. But those problems are all solved by looking at all those four problems and finding the right order in doing them. And of course, we sent out the challenges or the problems in a different order than the order that you had to do.
Yeah.
And that's how we lost most people, because they didn't see that they wanted to solve the first problem first before they went on to look at the second problem or the third problem or the fourth problem. And they didn't get it. And it was very few people that just looked at the whole picture and went, oh, I can solve this right now, and maybe this can lead to a solution for the other problems. So it was kind of out-of-the-box thinking that we were filtering for and that we were looking for that was shown in that challenge.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And what was the reaction of the people, like, at the end, like those who got through to the fourth week?
They really liked it. It's because in the end, every player that made it through, they came to the office, and we had a discussion there about the game and about the experience, and about the possible job or career at Ministry of Defense. And that was all very. They all enjoyed it a lot. It was very different from what they usually played, and it's one of the things that people that got through found it too easy. And we still lost like 90% of the people that played didn't get through it at all. So it's
it's really interesting, because it's quite timely to have this podcast, because at the weekend we saw the film with and his name's gone completely out of it. Like the British guy that worked during World War II to crack the Enigma.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'll insert his name later.
the one
my goodness.
The Enigma machine.
Yeah, and like, so he did the same thing. Like, the recruitment was a crossword puzzle. And they said, like, whoever, you know, if you can solve this crossword puzzle in under, you know, like 6 minutes or something, then we want you to come to this this place to undergo further tests.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. And he was looking for anybody that could solve the puzzle. It didn't need to be somebody, that was officially, you know, a chess champion or whatever. So it seems like, and I know in the UK, occasionally you will have like an advert in the paper for MI6 or MI5, like one of the special services, and it is a puzzle of some sort. Like, it will say, if you can crack this or something, then we're interested to hear from you. So it's very interesting, I think, that this is really like an evolution of this approach. Instead of just one puzzle, it's like a series of puzzles.
Yeah, and we added the characters to it to give a bit more information about who's actually playing and how he approaches the puzzles, or how he approaches life in general, to put it big like that. And it gave us so much valuable information about who's actually playing, because it's interesting to recruit people that have the skill sets and that that can do whatever they want. But if the motivation doesn't fit the organization, you're also getting an incredibly big liability into your organization.
Right.
And yeah, this is one of the approaches that the ministry tried to reduce that liability.
And what's been their reaction to it? I mean, did they, like, have they sort of like looked at the analysis of it and the caliber of the recruits that came through?
I don't know.
Okay.
This is one of the things. It's when you're working with a task force like this, it's you're very kept on a need to know basis, and this was out of my
Out of your security clearance.
Yeah, to put it like that. It's we had the final conversation with the candidates. They went to the Ministry of Defense, and then that's all we know.
You never heard from them again.
Yeah.
They've been given new IDs, exactly. A new passport, yeah. And they're somewhere online.
But it's one of the fun things that we noticed in the final results is that a lot of the people that got through, they were already working in for either similar functions, or they were working on with companies that were also dealing with the same security field, but they had different positions there, and they were looking to go into something new. So in the end, if I would look at the final profiles we got, they were very on the mark of what the ministry wanted.
Yeah, okay. So it's not like you got like a 14-year-old gamer or something.
No, we had a few younger ones, but they were just very good at what they did. And we had a few against our 30s, one in his 40s, and yeah, they just simply had the experience as well. And one of the things that we saw with the ministry is that each candidate also, they were looking for how to fit that candidate into the organization. So that means they could be joining the military or they could be going there as civilian, depending on what suits them. They could get an education or they would actually give the education. They were very opened to... to dealing with the candidates and their unique wishes and character.
That's really interesting. And what did you learn about the design of these types of games that you would, you know, do more of or do less of? What was surprising to you?
I think one of the things we underestimated is marketing.
Yeah.
We reserved plenty for marketing, but it wasn't enough.
Money, you mean?
Yeah, just money, and through money also comes your reach and how much people you can reach.
Right.
And we overestimated the power of a forum.
Right.
So it's one of the things that we would definitely do different. It's budget differently, so we have a lot more marketing power available, and put less in the development of the game.
Just get more people in at the beginning to know. And would you take out an advert in the paper or on LinkedIn or something?
I think I would, but it would have to be a trailhead, to put it like that, that fits your mythos of the world.
Yeah, you'd do it in world.
Yeah, because that needs to be the lure, and then you still of course need to have a little thing that says advertisement or this is a game. I also learned that's very important, that this is a game line, to get people into your world and to make them accept it as fictional.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much all marketing-wise and how we started up the game that I would think differently of. We spent a lot of time in research and development, also with you and the guys at Storyteller. And it's, in the end, I think nothing really survives the encounter with your first audience. To put it very simple. In those 4 weeks, we did so much customization work and changes and so much things that we had discussed hours on a half year before. They were just obliterated by the touch with the audience, that it just had to be deleted right away.
Not so good.
Yeah. So I would probably opt for a much shorter development time next time, but make sure that we are very dynamic in our development during the project and during our analysis of the audience and what's happening.
Do you think you could develop it like a week at a time if you say, okay, this is generally where we need to get to?
I think a week at a time, like you're playing live and developing live, I think that would be too much to ask.
Right.
But I think if you can develop the main storylines or the main branches, and you would make reservations in Conductor where you might have extensions or you're expecting extensions, and then make them live, I think that would be perfect.
Got it. Yeah, you could disable some scenes.
Yeah.
And then enabled, knowing that you didn't, you know, I guess it's the things that you don't anticipate. But, you know, I guess I've been talking a lot about these satellites and kernels, like to have the kernels so you kind of know where it's going to lead to, and just don't give people an opportunity to kill someone that you need to be alive.
Yeah.
that's my thing.
Yeah.
It's really... it's a really interesting application, I think. And you're doing more work in this area now, do you think, with the recruitment?
Well, we're talking with more organizations now, and we have a very good example now of what the technology can do and where we can take it. So I expect we'll do some more recruitment projects as well. Also, scenarios for training seem to be high on the list of projects. I think there is room in the future for this kind of project, definitely.
Because I feel like there's been some articles over the past 6 months about how people are mining LinkedIn and they're mining all kinds of social media to get a profile of a person.
Yeah.
And you know they're paying a recruitment person to do that, whereas if they designed one of these sort of games and they did it well, it is something that they could, you know, when they want to run the next recruitment round, then they could run the game again, you know. And
yeah,
I think it could be something. Or once they've developed it for recruitment, they could use it internally as some kind of developmental challenge or team building exercise.
That's some of the things that we're looking at right now internally of internal projects, because then you don't have the marketing.
Yes.
Step. And it's definitely very interesting for that. Also, because if you develop it internally, you can create it as a lean project, to put it like that. And you can keep extending it with new modules and with new story based on the main line. So you can develop it much more closer to the organization. And you can just keep growing it over a year, over 2 years, and slowly create this ever-growing training world for people to work in.
So it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's with the recruitment project, you're still very much stuck to the one kind of one story that you have to develop again every time you develop it. Because even if you have the templates, it's you still need to write a whole new story, and you still need to write whole new challenges, because otherwise people they're not going to play the same thing again. And there's going to be answers on the internet on how to get the best result.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the fact that the answers are out there.
Yeah.
It's, now just thinking about the whole, you know, where this might lead in future. It's because you think, like, newer generations are much more comfortable with sort of transmedia storytelling, you know, of doing a million things across, you know, a million platforms all at once. And it feels like it communicates what you're like as a company to have a recruitment process in this way. Like, if you're saying I'm an innovative, forward-looking company, and then your recruitment process is actually quite boring, you're not communicating the right values. Yeah. So to have something that's quite sexy, it could send the right message. And, like you were saying, you know, reveal this information about the player and the play styles, and, you know, are they team players? Are they kind of solo? You know, are they self obsessed or whatever? You know, it could be quite revealing, all ahead of actually, you know, because the closer somebody gets to, you know, signing up with a company, the more expensive it's going to get.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, especially with a bigger company, you're going to start lavishing dinners on them and all this type of stuff. And it would be quite nice to sort of add more, to filter out more sooner.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's, I agree. I don't think that it's, right now, it's still, to put it like that, it's experimental. There is not a lot of information on the internet or written in research that you can use to as a toolkit to work from. So everything we developed so far has been very much our own research and our own development. And that makes it, of course, very hard still to compete with, for example, headhunters on terms of price and budget. But that will slowly change. It's the more experience we get, the more efficient we get, the better stories we start telling, the more people will join up, and the more people will get through the game. But it's all just a matter of time before recruitment campaigns like this will become normal, to put it like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's much more accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be too disparaging of recruitment consultants, but they're a little bit like estate agents or realtors.
Yeah, I mean, you can fake it. It's yeah. A recruitment, when you're talking to a recruitment agent or a headhunter, you're only with them for an hour and some email conversations and phone conversations. But anyone who has some experience in putting a mask on can put a mask on for that time and keep it working and get whatever he wants from it. And in a game where you have to be involved for weeks, at random times, you slowly take that mask off of someone. And that makes a much, gives a much more reliable personality profile.
Exactly. Yeah, because even the personality tests, you could still... You know, and I know they try to like double answer the questions in different ways to try to stop people tricking them, but
yeah.
I'm sure you could coach yourself through something to make sure.
Yes, we looked at lots of lots of tests for people that are done when they're being hired. And for every test, there is an answer online on how to fill it in exactly right for a certain kind of job. So it's those tests, they're very... It's pretty much old world kind of job hiring.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So, Stefan, what's I'm gonna wrap up the podcast. I think it's been really interesting. What's next for you? What are you working on now?
I'm developing some of my own projects, and with Domain 5, we're working on scenario training projects, and also more recruitment, both for internal teams as well as external. But it's all still in the pipeline, how they say it.
So yeah.
We'll see where it ends up. It's probably going to be in the same area of governments and big corporations, those kind of clients. And I'm very interested to see where it will take me.
Perfect. And where can people find you online?
Well, we have a website, domain5.org. It's a bit simple because of the projects that we do. We didn't want to put too much information on the website. But there's an email address on there on which they can always reach us.
That's very good. That's very good. And just while you're on the line, so people don't think I went off, it was Alan Turing. I don't know how he forgot. Like, I should have done the Turing test on myself and I'd have found. So, Stefan, thank you very much indeed. It's been really interesting. I think this is a fascinating application of alternate reality games.
Yeah, we were the first worldwide to try this kind of game.
Fantastic.
So yeah, it was quite a journey. I would love to do some more of it.